Welcome to the Due Diligence Podcast, where we explore how leaders make and execute their biggest decisions, from transactions to founding organizations to career pivots and beyond. This podcast is produced by Sleeping Giant Capital. We connect executive talent and capital to invest in West Michigan businesses. To learn more, visit us at sleepinggiantcapital.com or stop by our office in downtown Kalamazoo.
Hi, I'm Justin Murray, and I'm an executive in residence at Sleeping Giant Capital. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. My co-host Doug Lepistow and I speak with Tom Olive, CEO of Crystal Flash. We explore ESOPs, employee stock ownership plans, as an exit strategy for owners, the pros, the cons, and the complexities. We hope you enjoy our conversation. Good afternoon, Tom. Thanks for joining us on a blustery day here in Kalamazoo. The snow is out. We got a cup of coffee to warm up, and now we're going to talk about ESOPs.
Thank you very much for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So I guess, number one question is, Grand Rapids, I think, is number 12 in the country for number of ESOPs, part of an ESOP today as CEO of Crystal Flash. So would love to know, maybe, when are ESOPs not a great fit for an owner?
Well, I think if I can go back to your first part there, it is not surprising that Grand Rapids in West Michigan is the home to so many ESOPs, because I think the values of ESOPs and the values of West Michigan really are very, very well aligned in the ownership culture, in the idea of selling owners wanting to keep the employment and the businesses here in West Michigan. And we can talk about that more as we go through through our time together here. To your specific question about, when maybe ESOPs are not the greatest fit, you've got a few different characteristics that I'd suggest you need to kind of be cautious about. You do need a business and a business model that is a steady contributor, positive cash flows is in your best case, so that you can have a pretty steady and conscious valuation. And also, as you get into the retirement phase and you have employees leaving, you're going to have to be constantly paying what's called the repurchase obligation, or basically the retirement portion payout on there. So you need to have a good solid cash flow. It's important to also, I think, have a long-term employee base. And not essential, but I think it's beneficial on a couple of different levels. The first level is the value accrues in an ESOP over the long term. This isn't a quick hitter. There's oftentimes a vesting period, maybe 5-year kind of a vesting period for the accumulation of those benefits. But more important than that is you want to create value by building the underlying business over time, and that value creation process then accrues to the employee owners in the form of their retirement account. And then also just on the administrative side, if you're constantly churning employees, former team members in and out of an ESOP, you just got to be managing the administration and getting those accounts out, and how you choose to handle the repurchase obligations upon termination all comes into play. So having a long-term, value-oriented employee base, I think, is truly important. And obviously the flip side is the not fitting very well. And then, it's kind of what's the objective? And it goes to why many owners establish ESOPs in the first place. They want to reward economically the folks that help them to build that business and the future generations of employees that are going to drive the value in the business. So if it's a private equity backed, and it's the 3 or 5 year in and out, or maybe today 5 to 7 year in and out, let's do the turnaround. That's not an ESOP environment. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a company that is wants to be there and wants to continue with a long-term vision and purpose, and a business model that's durable, or one that can be adapted over time. So I think those are kind of the pros and cons that you need to weigh when you're looking at whether an ESOP even makes sense out of the gates or not.
Positive cash flows. Do you think does it matter how positive the cash flow is? So, I mean, if you think of number of employees versus kind of that cash flow range, is there a sweet spot there?
Yeah, number of employees is an interesting one because you will see there are quite a number of professional services firms, engineering firms, architectural firms, those kinds of firms that will pursue the ESOP route. Now, they might not be large in numbers, but they've got a great business model that if they can have a good book of business and keep turning that over, or you can go to a Crystal Flash as a fuel distribution business with over 300 employees, and you have large ESOPs like Publix grocery stores is I think the largest ESOP in the country, which are tens of thousands of employees. So it can work at any level. The other half of your question there is a certain amount of investment and administrative expense and legal fees and getting the valuation and getting your trustee in place. Again, all terms we can talk about as we go through here. So getting an ESOP established is probably going to cost a couple hundred thousand dollars. So you need to have a business that's durable enough that can you can afford that and still, you know, on the other side, the selling party can feel good about what they're taking away in that transaction. So again, it's always a little dubious to pick a number, but you are talking about a business that's probably got several million dollars of EBITDA be able to pay the expenses and maintain that over time.
All right, great. All right, so we'll go back a little bit. You mentioned Crystal Flash, so you are the CEO of Crystal Flash. Can you talk a little bit about what led you to Crystal Flash?
Sure. Like much of my career, serendipity and good fortune. I was wrapping up the second stint I had with a private equity backed companies. We had a strategic buyer. We're completing the transaction on that and a recruiter in Grand Rapids that I'd used at both of my prior stops here in West Michigan reached out and had the mandate for finding the next president and CEO of Crystal Flash. And so I joined that process, went through the hiring process there. And fortunately, on the other side was selected to be the subsequent leader. Crystal Flash was a family-owned business. Had been family-owned for over 80 years. In fact, it was 84 years of its total arc from 1932, which now being 2022 as we record this, it's our 90th anniversary, and we're coming to the conclusion of that and celebrating 90 years of our corporate identity. So the family that had owned the business and operated had just fantastic foundational values. They were really interested in, as I said earlier, this idea of passing the business forward and paying it forward and through employee ownership to the folks that had helped them to build the business over the decades, or at least the ones that were still there and employed, as well as they just really didn't have the heart or the stomach for a strategic buyer in our industry. There are a number of large strategic buyers, but they have a very a well-worn playbook that involves stripping out, you know, as much overhead as possible and taking some different approaches that family-owned businesses aren't always comfortable with. And we have the ability to keep that kind of family character and run our own show as an ESOP, as an independent company. So they had determined that that's what they wanted to do. The third generation owner, realizing that he was going to be retiring about at the same time of implementing this ESOP, needed to find a future leader and someone who could take the business forward. And we were fortunate enough to come together in May of 2015 and make that first step of the transition.
Okay, so when you came on in 2015, was the ESOP established, or were you still working on establishing?
The concept that it was going to be an ESOP transaction was well established in the family's mind, and they had made that choice. The actual transaction was not, and that was job one in year one, and we actually were able to accomplish that on April 28th and 29th of 2016. So almost a year, almost exactly a year later, we were able to complete the ESOP transaction, and we became a 100% ESOP right out of the gates, which isn't required, but was a neat opportunity for our beneficial owners.
Tom, you were mentioning the choice the notion that the owners had instilled some values into the business. What is, people often say that, what does that look like? And how would you know if your culture was well aligned to be a fit, to be an ESOP?
Yeah. Well, there's two parts of the question there, Doug. So first of all, you know, our five foundational values are integrity in everything we do, safety for people and the environment as a fuel distribution company, customer service delivered in a caring and supportive way, openness and diversity of thought in the way we conduct our business, and striving to continually demonstrate our pride in Crystal Flash. And those five value statements were in place before I arrived. And we honor the family and thank them for the gift of Crystal Flash by maintaining, and they are our foundational value statements still today. Now, do you have to have those five values to be a successful ESOP? No, obviously not. But I think what you see in there in that character and what you see in a family-owned company oftentimes is this idea of integrity and care for the community and attention to the details, and in our case of the environment and safety, which are so critical in our industry. And you don't have to be family owned to do that, but I think companies that have those kind of characteristics are great candidates for an ESOP because you have a bit of a communal spirit, if you will, and you're talking about a shared, not necessarily a shared governance, but in essence, a shared ownership here through the ESOP, because we are beneficial owners of the economic value to be generated by this company through the retirement plan, which fund is actually the entity that owns the company. So I think, you know, having that common goal, that common spirit is would be a great indicator of a likely successful ESOP.
Interesting was the notion of paying it forward to employees that help build business, because we're talking about typically family-owned businesses that have been around for a while. It's an interesting idea because, you know, everything you hear today, you know, I see a lot of young people, there is no loyalty. And so there's a lot of coming and going. And so how do you think about an ESOP in like today's environment where you have so much or less commitment to an organization? How does an ESOP fit into that? Does it help it? Does it stop it? Does it hurt it? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great point. And in fact, in our Crystal Flash mission statement, we define why we're here, what we do, how we do it, which is where those values fit into, where we do it, and who does it. And that who is obviously the people, the beneficial owners, the team members, all synonymous terms there. And I make the point that really in the ESOP, there's something in it for everyone. It could be a young person who's coming out of school, be that high school or college, and you know their greatest objective right now is to buy their first car or get their first house. Maybe it's a young person, a young family that's starting a family. They're young partners there. For middle-aged folks, there's value in that. For old folks like myself, you know, my standing joke is, you know, folks that are looking to go off and become a goat farmer or something. There's value in it. And what I mean by that is by coming to work every day, doing what you're going to do anyway, which is work hard, provide great value to our customers, be a great team member, economic value can accrue to you. And so the longer you stay, hopefully the more that value accrues. But even in a five-year arc, once you get fully vested in our plan, it's a five-year vesting schedule. It doesn't have to be, but that's the way ours is structured. There's going to be value there. If you stay 10 years, I hope there's a lot more value. If you stay 20, maybe even more. So it will be very interesting as you highlight, and we think about, you know, we see the studies today that, you know, my children who are in their early 20s are going to have 20 or 40 different career stops. I mean, I think I've had 8 and that's like crazy. That's a lot for my generation. So we'll see. But again, I come back. Fundamentally, there's economic value that you can accrue there by doing what you're going to do anyway. And that's being a great team member and making sure we delight the customer.
As that 5 years is typical of an ESOP in terms of vesting?
Yes, three to five usually I think are the ranges.
I mean, you can see it as a great. You can see in one sense a great solution to retain talent because they're incentivized to stay, right? Yep. And the flip side of that coin is organizations benefit from having new people continually come in and there's a refresh cycle there, and so managing that is probably interesting in an ESOP.
Well, we've only been an ESOP now since 2016, so we've got 6 years under our belt. Okay. So I don't know what the 26 years looks like, and I won't be around for that. Right. But your point's well taken. Yes, and there are some there are ESOPs that can get into that situation where. You get a number of years down the road and you get all the shares are allocated and you've got team members, employees that aren't retiring, aren't leaving because it is a good deal and they love their job and whatever. And all of a sudden, the newbies come in and they're not getting stock put into their retirement account. They're just getting cash distributions. Well, cash is nice, but it's probably not going to grow as fast as an equity investment is, at least, you would hope it's not growing as fast as an equity investment is, and so that is that. And there's actually a whole term of in the trade of the have and have not problem, and so that is a very real condition in very mature ESOPs. We've not faced it, obviously, as young as we are, but it's something that you need to be aware of, and there are tools and methodologies and ways that you can manage that and. That's where you go talk to the real ESOP experts and the folks can guide you through some of those items. But you want to do it at year 10 or 15, not wait till year 25 when you kind of are looking at that cliff and going, oh my goodness.
Maybe we should dive into what are the mechanics of an ESOP? Because it sounds, I think one thing that people often, when we see and hear a lot about people considering this and talking about this, the first thing they say often is it's either expensive or it's complicated.
Yes and yes.
And so how do you break down a high level of how someone should think about an ESOP?
Yeah. Let's think about
what are the choices I have on this thing? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't think we have enough time to talk about all of the choices because there's a shell and that. But to your first question though, Doug, and that's a great question. I really think about it as a triangle or a triad. There are three parties involved here. There's the company, the business, the economic entity. There is in one corner of this triangle. You have the selling party. The family, the owners, the partners, whatever they are, as another kind of element in this triangle. And then you have some financing source. In our case, it was our bank. We had a long history with our bank. They were very generous and willing to support us, even as we did a 100% ESOP right out of the gates. And you've got one other party in here, and it kind of goofs up my triangle analogy, but you have a trustee. So what are all these parties doing? So let's put the trustee and the company and the bank in our three corners of the triangle, and then we've got our owners outside of the triangle. So what you fundamentally do is the company will go out and borrow a lump sum of money. And in our case, as I said, it was 100% of our purchase price. That cash then is loaned to the trust, which is overseen by a trustee. The trust then takes that cash and buys the stock of the company from the sellers. So our sellers are sitting out here off to the side. And so in our case, again, 100% transaction, the cash transferred to the sellers gave the stock to the trust overseen by a third party trustee, and away we go. Now we have our triangle. So each year as we operate, we've got two loans going on. We have what's called, referred to as the internal loan, and this is going to be a lot of inside baseball, but we'll hang with me for a second. We have the internal loan between the trust and the company, and we have the external loan between the company and the financier, the bank, in our case. So we have this triangle, and we have this cash that's generating, is recycling between the company and the trust, and it's a retirement benefit in essence. And then you've got just your relationship with your bank, like you would under any, arguably under any owner under any ownership structure that you would be facing. So that's the complex structure. Now, that's the easy version, because then you get into all kinds of the, okay, what are my plan design choices? And there are different ways that you can do that internal loan. What we described was essentially recycling. You can do this thing called redeeming, where you're actually creating treasury stock. And the way all these different rules work is they're kind of affecting your number of shares outstanding. So it's affecting your per share valuation. Oh, by the way, another thing you do as an ESOP is each year the trustee employs a qualified valuation firm. They will come in and they will do a valuation of the underlying operating business. And so what they're essentially trying to do is they're trying to mimic as if this company was publicly traded, by and large. So you're doing a discounted cash flow, you're doing a market comps analysis, and you're coming out with a concluded enterprise value, subtract off your debt, you're down to an equity value. Your equity value divided by your total number of shares now gives you your per share price. You take that per share price times the number of shares in each beneficial owner's retirement account, voila, you have their value, the value of their retirement account. You do that for 5 years, somebody's fully vested, they choose to leave the company. You now have a put option where they're required to put those shares back to the company, and the company buys those back. And again, there's some options in different ways that, not financial options, there are some different alternative ways that can be affected and executed there. But yeah, boy, that sounds pretty complicated if you're listening to it, right? Yeah. So if one is going to do this, you absolutely want to deal with legal counsel that's very competent and experienced in the ESOP world, and it's a fairly small community. It's not a deep community, but we're very blessed here in West Michigan that we have some really highly qualified ESOP attorneys in this 131 corridor here between Grand Rapids and Kalamazoo, and are just phenomenal to work with there. We're also blessed. We have a handful of very qualified valuation firms. And so again, you can work with folks in West Michigan with West Michigan values and business delivery kinds of attitudes. And they're really great to work with. There are other folks also spread out, across the country that are great people too, in that sense. So while it's a small community, it's a community that's very, very avid and active in the ESOPs, and can guide a seller, can guide an ongoing operating company through that process.
Okay, thanks. So two questions. Great summary on it. I guess one would be on the vesting period. So when you go 100% ESOP, you mentioned it's a 5-year vesting period. Is that something that is driven by the banks, given so that way you have more time to maybe replenish the cash and pay down the debt? Or is that something driven more by Crystal Flash and that you want to see, folks that are actually bought in 5 years plus? Or
it's the latter.
And again, this is where you need counsel. I think in the ESOPs operate under the regulatory authority of the Department of Labor and the IRS. We haven't talked about the IRS angle yet. We've really talked about the retirement, ERISA and retirement program element of this under the Department of Labor. And there are a couple of different options. And when you initiate your plan design, you can choose what those vesting parameters are. But to your point, yes, if you want...
Helpful, right?
Yeah, if you want 5-year, 20% a year, you want 6-year cliff, or some of those things, all those considerations are valid considerations of how long does it take for someone to have access to the full value of the retirement benefit, and do they take advantage of that and move on, or as we talked about earlier.
Okay. And then when you mentioned earlier, when you came on, it took about a year to get this all established. So maybe what was the biggest challenge you faced in that year of kind of implementing this? What is maybe the biggest watch out that you saw as you kind of worked through this? This was your first time working through.
This was my first experience with an ESOP. Yes, absolutely. And to be fair, my predecessor, the third generation owner who was going to sell the business, he had kind of stepped out of the day-to-day management. Our COO, prior COO, had taken over that leadership role of the operating business. And he spent probably a good 12, 15 months before I came on board going through this process, going through the discernment, understanding the the mechanics and the details and coming to that conclusion. And then they decided to do the recruiting because he knew his time would be short. I came on board, and then it was start to move to the implementation. In a lot of respects, I would say that the ESOP process is really not a lot different than any other sales transaction. Again, with a couple of wrinkles, but you essentially get a trustee that will represent the ESOP. They're the buyer. You negotiate a deal between the trustee and the company, essentially, and that's going to have a term sheet. That's going to have asset purchase agreements, all of those things. So any other transaction that'll take a period of time, you're going through many of those same steps to make that happen. You have to arrange the financing. And so get your bank or whatever your financing sources are going to be, it can be seller financed. Probably the one wrinkle here that is a point of, I don't want to say contention, but more attention in an ESOP. And the reason that trustee is there is they want to make sure that they pay fair value. You don't want to get in a situation, well, it can get ugly if you get in a situation where a seller has overpriced the ESOP and enrich themselves, and you get X number of years down the road and the company is struggling financially. That is something that the Department of Labor frowns on seriously and can come back and can have some pretty negative consequences. So that's where the trustee, it'll get a valuation firm involved, and you've got legal counsel on both sides and all those fun things. Other than that, kind of that one little wrinkle there, it looks like any other sales transaction. So how long does that take? I would argue.
Got it. And then now that, this is fully operating, has been for many years, you're the CEO. So employees are also owners. So when it comes to day-to-day operations, can you talk to maybe, are there things that employees vote on from time to time?
A lot of that or all of that is governed by your plan design. And the DOL and IRS have a kind of a templated plan design that you can implement. I describe it this way, and you've heard me use this term maybe a couple different times. I talk about the beneficial owners. And that was really an important thing that we had to share with our employee owners, because the lingo of the ESOP land is, employee owners. And so, yes, some of these employers, some of our team members, our employees are like, oh, great. When do I get to vote that bozo off the island, kind of thing. And it's like, never. You don't get to, you aren't that. You're actually a beneficial owner. You are the beneficiary of the economic benefits of the ownership through the retirement plan. So another way I say it, and this is very much tongue in cheek, but it's a benevolent autocracy, and I'm the autocrat, kind of a thing here. So employees have, under our plan design, under most plan designs, have very, very limited pass through voting rights. There's like one scenario where if you have an asset sale of a majority of the assets, or the majority of the profit generating assets of the entity, they would have a pass-through voting right. I believe that's the one thing that the DOL requires. Again, through your plan design, you can give more voting rights and more pass-through voting rights if you wish to on that. But it functions like, I would say, any other company. There is a hierarchy. However, the hierarchy chooses to manage that company, whether it's autocratic or whether it's a more democratic process, all those things are within the choice of the leadership of the company. Now, the one thing we do have is we do have a fiduciary board of directors. As an ESOP, you will need to have, and you do have a fiduciary board of directors. So I answer to a fiduciary board of directors, which currently is six members in addition to myself, and those other six folks are all outside directors. You can have all inside directors. You can have, you know, there's again, various flavors of in the Neapolitan ice cream box there for how ESOPs choose to do that. Your trustee can be an outside institutional trustee, which we've employed, or it can be an internal person. It's just a matter of kind of where you want to place that risk and where you want to place that fiduciary responsibility.
So you have announced your retirement. I think it's public now, right?
It is now. Thank you, Justin. Yeah, it is public. Yes.
Okay. So there'll be a new CEO of Crystal Flash in 6-9 months.
Hopefully in five or six months. By May of next year.
So again, maybe another real life situation, right? So you're on there's a process now to hire a new candidate. So then will that fiduciary board, will they be involved in kind of a new CEO process, or how does that work?
Oh, absolutely. We have a wonderful board, and our chairman of our board has been the CEO, present CEO of an ESOP company for 15 plus years. So he really knows the ins and the outs of the ESOP. He's been a great counselor along the way. But, you know, an ESOP board is really no different than any other corporate board, with a duty of loyalty and a duty of care and, you know, all those kinds of good governance terms in there. And our board takes their, you know, number one prime objective is the hiring and the oversight of the CEO as their number one obligation. As our board will describe it, they have one employee, and right now it happens to be me. And beyond that, then, you know, it's my responsibility to find the other 300 plus employees that we need to deliver our customer delight. So absolutely, the board's very much engaged in this process. We are looking at internal and external candidates, leading a national search in this case, because we think our employee owners ultimately deserve to have the best candidate we can find. And if that candidate comes from internally, that would be phenomenal. If we find someone externally, then we'll know that we found the best candidate.
And then I guess we're acquirers here at Sleeping Giant. We're trying to acquire West Michigan small business. So I guess if you thought of an ESOP as maybe interested in selling, or if there was a fit there, can you maybe describe a little bit on what that process would look like to maybe even acquire an ESOP?
Yeah, you know, it's not a whole lot different than any other acquisition of a business, but for one important step. And that one important step is, so let's back up. If someone were to approach us, and again, one of the things we put in place as part of our governance was a policy statement and a process about how we would handle these things. But basically, the board is delegated to me and to our CFO the responsibility to vet any offers that might come in, you know, if that were ever to happen, to determine if there's a bona fide buyer there, they have the financial capability, they've actually done transactions of size, those kinds of considerations. Once we have established that, I mean, we would inform the board pre-LOI, but it would be our responsibility to negotiate the LOI. We'd bring the LOI to our board. They would have to approve it, that fiduciary board of directors. And then here's where the wrinkle becomes, is the board would then engage with the trustee and inform the trustee and involve the trustee. The trustee will never negotiate the deal. The deal is between the company and the company's board and a potential buyer. I mean, I'd say never say never, but 99.9% of the time the trustee is going to stay out of that. But what will have to happen is there will they'll need to be allowance in that sales process for the trustee to do an evaluation, get a fairness opinion on the value, and to make sure that the employee owners, the retirement plan, is being fairly represented in this process. And again, kind of the standard of the trustee, the standard of the board of directors, is to act in the best interest of the plan participants for their future retirement benefit. And you know, I think that's kind of the verbiage, or roughly the verbiage. So there's that one little extra wrinkle that you would find in a sales process. It would add some time to the sequence for the selling party. It's going to add a little bit of expense because you got another set of lawyers, you got a valuation firm, those kinds of things. But again, all very doable. You just factor it into the overall program.
So maybe we'll wrap up with two more questions.
Yeah, I think this is the last question I had. Would just be, so this podcast is focused on industry, buyers, sellers. So I just have a question, I guess, now that you've been through this process, you're 6 years into the process of kind of forming and growing an ESOP. So maybe what are the two things somebody who's considering various options, what are maybe the two pieces of advice you would give them? I'm hearing a lot about governance.
Yep.
Seems like that is very important.
Yep. Yep.
You know, careful planning, and then kind of getting that size and culture piece right. But
right.
Maybe what are the two things that you'd leave somebody?
Well, the most important thing that we haven't talked about, gentlemen, we kind of left it hanging out there a little bit ago, is the beauty of selling, let's say the family, the beauty is being a seller to an ESOP is there are some incredible tax advantages. There you can do what's called a 1042 transaction. And if you take the proceeds and invest those into qualified reinvestment assets, which again are defined, basically U.S. equities, you are able to defer the gains on the selling price, whatever your capital gains would have been, until those subsequent qualified assets are liquidated. And through, you know, good estate planning, you may be able to even pass those assets on to future generations and defer those taxes for an extended period of time. So, you know, it's kind of in the ESOP industry, the joke is, you know, ESOPs are the one thing that both the reds and the blues can agree on, because they are great for capital formation or for the rewarding of those who have built these businesses, the sellers, and they're great for the future capital formation of retirement benefits for the employee owners. And that's really the, you know, kind of the underlying crux of it. And so we got to make sure that we get that in there. There's a great tax advantage potentially available to the selling party. So I, you know, that needs to go into the calculus and into the weight. And I think maybe the other part of your question is just, you know, what to think about is, again, we'll kind of end where we started, and that's, you know, make sure that you've got a company that is able to generate stable and hopefully growing cash flows, that it's not a highly cyclical business. That'll be, you know, I think key candidates there. You have the ability to work with your employees and have them think like owners and think about the long term and to participate there. And then, you know, maybe it came through here, but ultimately you need a pretty astute management team that's able to kind of juggle these balls and add these few extra layers on the onion here for the ESOP, and balance that out with obviously leading and guiding the business in whatever its strategic direction needs to be. So I think those would be my key considerations I'd offer.
Last question.
You do?
Last question. Okay, so we were talking, we were getting coffee about the great success that Crystal Flash has had in terms of its performance. And I'm curious, and I attribute that obviously to you, Tom, but you know,
team. We'll hand that to the other 319 employee 319. Owners.
So I'd love from your point of view, and this is a difficult question for you to answer because you weren't around for a significant period of time at Crystal Flash pre-ESOP, but how is Crystal Flash different? How is it different in terms of the value it creates, its environment, its culture, because of the ESOP?
Yeah. I mean, I think it takes time. It takes time. I mean, we still are probably not all the way there, even after 6 years. We do complete culture surveys every couple of years, and we do measure You know, how many folks would be net promoters of the ESOP and advocates of it, and where our skeptics are, not where they are, but kind of the number of skeptics. And we're seeing that the promoters and the advocates for the ESOP have grown over time, and the skeptics are declining. And again, the broad research in the ESOP community will tell you that you're never going to win everybody over. But if you can get down to 10 to 15% of skeptics and naysayers, you're doing really, really well. And thankfully, we're kind of at that level here. We just got some folks in the middle to get them to be real advocates. And I think therein lies the answer, that when folks do understand, and we say it this way, that every time a customer or a prospective customer calls into Crystal Flash, or every time they interact with one of our drivers during a delivery, they're interacting with an owner. It's a beneficial owner through the economic benefits of the retirement plan, but you're an owner, so act like one. Take pride in what we do. Back to that pride in Crystal Flash. You know, if we may not be the lowest priced person in the marketplace, but you're worth it because we offer exceptional services. And, you know, we have a fair value exchange going on there. We're able to talk about taking care of the equipment, making sure that we're safe, because anything that goes oops ultimately comes out of our pockets. And everything that goes right in a year like here in 2022, we paid out an incremental bonus in April. We paid out an incremental bonus at the 4th of July and at Labor Day. And we'll be announcing tomorrow something in Thanksgiving. So don't publish this until after tomorrow, around that. And so there's real economic benefits that are flowing back to our owners, beneficial owners, right now, because they make the right choices and the right decisions. And I think that's what we're starting to see, and what helps us to kind of accelerate accelerate the growth and the profitability and the cash strength of Crystal Flash.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you, Tom. We appreciate you coming down from Grand Rapids. Enjoy your trip to Hawaii. And thanks again for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's been a joy.